This is Roots Pod.
Now it's over the top, and it's in space for Vegas, cutting, looking at goal, and finding goal to maybe put this game away.
And welcome into Roots Pod. This is Aaron here with John and Peter. Sorry we had to take last week off. I got sick, lost my voice, and I don't think a podcast of me hacking away for 30 minutes would have been fun for anyone. So we decided to take a week off. It also, I think, worked out because, as you'll recall, 2 weeks ago, as we were talking about the loss to Phoenix and the upcoming match against Las Vegas Lights, Peter said, if we lose to Lights, the next episode will be the grimmest one yet. And then I don't know if you've maybe erased this from your memory in much the same way I have, but after a back and forth first half where I think Oakland probably had a slight upper hand, the bottom fell out in the second half. Vegas got a goal in the 46th minute from Coleman Gannon, in the 50th minute from Guasu Samake, I think is how you pronounce that name, and then in the 66th from Valentin Noel. Oakland didn't look like they had a chance in the second half against Las Vegas. So instead of bringing you the grimmest podcast ever last week, we're doing it this week because since Las Vegas, the Roots then hosted Monterey Bay, FC Union FC. There's just too many words in that name. This was another one. I thought Oakland didn't look great in the first half, but they didn't look outmatched. And they looked even better in the second half, but
the clear better team in the second half.
Yeah. I think that's right. But the only goal in the game, Chase Boone for Monterey Bay in the 86th minute. And then the cherry on top of this particular shit Sunday was a post-game melee, which will now see Babacar Jai and Neville Hackshaw suspended for 3 games. So what we have here is a team that is struggling, a roster that hasn't had a chance to gel for any number of reasons. First, it was illness, then it was the international break, and now it's suspensions of 2 starters. I mean, could not come at a better time.
The good news about the Vegas loss is that Vegas are apparently okay. They subsequently beat San Antonio. The bad news is that Monterey Bay definitely suck, and we also lost to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in the second half, it's hard to know how much this optimism is going to carry over, but foreshadowing, I was optimistic because we finally got to see again what looks like the first choice roster on the pitch, right? Diaz, Rodriguez, Cherie, they're on the pitch together. And I think Oakland had 3 really, really good opportunities to score, and they just didn't convert any of them.
Johnny was offside by about 18 inches. You know, it wasn't the world's closest call. We didn't get jobbed. But, like, he did almost everything right on that. I think from, like, a execution standpoint, that's basically a goal that they successfully scored. It just doesn't get us any points.
Doesn't count, yeah. I will say a part of me wonders, and this is just where I am. This is There's a good Michigan blog that calls this the black pit of negative expectations.
That's
right. 2024 NCAA national football champions, Michigan Wolverines. That fan base is no longer in the B-pone, but I think this fan base might be in the B-pone at this point. At least the hardcore portion of it. That I recall thinking 3 years ago, when this team was struggling to get off the ground in that inaugural USL season, that it's not like the Roots weren't creating chances. They were just not creating them at a clip that was enough unless you were going to be ultra clinical. And I counted 3 really good ones in the second half against Monterey. I just wonder if 6 like half to really good chances every game is actually going to be enough. Again, this is the B-pone talking. I want to make that clear, but I want to be encouraged. At the same time, I just don't know if there's enough there, or if we still need to see something click. And maybe this is also colored, and I'll just throw this out there and you guys can react to it. I think the thing that struck me the most about this game is that whenever Monterey Bay got the ball, they got up the pitch just as fast as they could. There didn't seem to be a thought about who was going to take it up there, where it was going to go. And maybe this is just because they're well-trained, they're fluid, you know, at this point. But they would get up the pitch with a quickness. Oakland would get the ball, and it looked like they were just waiting for all of Monterey Bay players to get behind the ball. Like, you'd get it up to about the 30, 35-yard line, and then you just stop. And I'm thinking to myself, what are we doing here, guys? Like, the obvious difference between these two teams is that one is trying to get the ball in the direction of the goal as fast as they can at all times, and the other one is kind of maybe thinking about doing it. And you couldn't tell whether it was a matter of a lack of confidence, or maybe they're just trying to drill patterns of play and they haven't clicked and these guys are thinking too much on the pitch. I don't know what it is, but I don't know that it's really a recipe for success if this is how the attack is going to look for the rest of the season. I assume it'll get better, but I think it's got to get better pretty quickly, or else the season could go south pretty fast.
No, we don't do an effective job of building the attack through the middle because we don't hold possession well enough. And so that means we're like both that we're like ponderous and sloppy. You know, it's like
that's the best combination.
I know. And it's like I just don't, you know, they're not clicking in a way that'll let them do that. Go slowly through the midfield, move everyone up into the 18-yard box, do the horseshoe, and then try to get like a breakthrough. They're just turning the ball over somewhere in the middle third. It's frustrating. You know, I thought that one of the things that made a big difference is I thought that Memo and Johnny came on and ran their asses off. You know, I'm not suggesting that the other guys don't care, because I know that they do. But Memo and Johnny came on and played like they've never cared about anything as much as they cared about trying to win that game. And it made a huge difference. Suddenly Monterey was like panicking a little bit and guys were running past them and playing balls in behind, and they were making, and Monterey were making mistakes, and we almost capitalized on it. And, you know, I've complained about Jai's performance on this podcast so far. I wish he didn't get a red card, but I'd be picking Memo next game anyway. Like, no question, I would be starting Memo next game no matter what.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. Johnny, I mean, came in and almost had all of the offensive action. Aaron, you had a good point there in the, especially in the first half there. It was like they got up to the 35-yard area, 40, 45-yard area, and it just stalled there. In my talking points, I brought up the heat map from the USL Center. The heat map from the first half, and you can see that is exactly where they lined up at. You know, the heaviest heat map is right before the midfield line, especially on the right side. And all of their chances came from crosses on the right side, from Tamakis into the box. I think I had two touches inside the opponent's penalty area in the first half, and those two touches came in the last 5 minutes of the first half. So it's, you know, it speaks to that identity crisis that I've talked about. It's, I just don't know what this team is supposed to be good at or what the plan is. You know, if we're defensive, if we don't want the ball, great, let's do that. Let's be good defensively, take fewer touches with the ball. Don't worry about it. Let these other teams have it. If we can hit teams on the break, use our speed and be clinical, then that is a plan I would love to see executed. But here it's like they're still, and this was the same thing from last year, was it's caught between two minds. It's moving the ball horizontally at the 40-yard marker instead of getting down the field quickly and creating an opportunity. You know, Sherry is 6'7", something like that. You know, he's perfectly built as a target man, but we haven't seen him be used as a target man. We've seen him trying to have the ball at his feet and be hold up play, more so like a quick, agile, a smaller striker with a different skill set. Haiti made and Violette made all their noise just having Sherry take one touch in front of the net on a header or a kick, and that was how he was effective. He didn't need to take a lot of touches. You know, he could take 12 touches in the game. If some of those 12 touches are shots, then wonderful, you know. But it seems the game plan is not that. So I just don't know the plan. I want to see more of it going forward. I'm ranting now. You know, I think I'm just really unloading here. But
yeah, that's what the black bit of negative expectations does to a guy. You end up just ranting. I think you bring up bringing up Sherry is I think that's a useful jumping off point there. Is when we talk about what are we supposed to be doing on offense? I get the sense that the coaching staff doesn't trust him yet. And it's not just about fitness, because he's only got two starts. You know, he's appeared in all five matches, but he's only got two starts. And I think only like 2.5 full 90s at you know, in terms of total minutes played. And I don't think that he is necessarily responsible for this. Peter, as you just said, it really looked like Memo and Johnny were the ones who changed the game this past weekend against Monterey Bay. But I think all of our most threatening moments have come with Sherry on the pitch. And I got to think at some point that's not a coincidence. Five games, it might be too quick to say that, but it really feels like his presence is helping them stretch the defense in some way. But he is not personally... he's not making the flashes. He doesn't look like the guy necessarily that was helping Violette beat Austin FC. Because we seem to want to do some really intricate stuff around the box. And I've honestly no idea why. Like the other teams are not cooperating with it. And I don't know. It's also, and this is another conversation I think we'll get to. It's hard to know what to make of the roster, right? I mean, is this a question of we're not using the available assets in the right way? Or is this a question of like this roster just, we got to change our expectations?
Yeah. I think you make a really good point with the striker role. I mean, one of my talking points for the last three games has been the lineup choices. I mean, for any number of reasons, we aren't getting the same lineup choices, but sickness, injuries. I mean, Sherry lost his spot. You know, Sherry started as the starting striker alongside Johnny. Well, Trayvon Reed's gotten two straight starts. We've seen Cedeno move up there, and now Lindo is apparently back from injury, and guess who starts up top? It was Lindo and Feka. So, yeah, I think you are exactly right there that Sherry is falling out of favor. Is he not able to execute what this system is? Are we trying to fit a puzzle piece into a you know, a spot that doesn't, where he doesn't fit? Or are we not gonna, you know, does he has to fit into the system, or can we plan around him? I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't seem like
you sort of wonder, are. Right? He doesn't speak very good English, right? I mean, he speaks Haitian Creole, like you would expect.
Yes.
And I kind of wonder if we are trying to implement a very complicated, intricate system, and it makes it sound a lot like we're running like a John Beilein offense here, to use another Michigan sports reference. I don't really think it's necessarily that, but if we're trying to institute, you know, patterns of play that are more than basic, I wonder if the language barriers is actually a real problem here. Cause I don't think I would imagine somebody else on the roster might speak French, but I don't think there's many, you know, on a global scale, there's not a whole lot of people who speak a Haitian Creole. And I kind of wonder if maybe that's part of what's going on.
No, I mean, we heard, I mean, I guess this is John's story. He can tell it.
What have I heard?
Oh, that there are only two other French speakers on the team. And one of them is Nané, who isn't on the field. And one of them is Camier, who is a, you know, a reserve. And that they have talked to each other and laughed that neither of them can understand what Cherie is saying.
Exactly. It's, you know, French and French, Haitian Creole aren't exactly always overlapping. You know, there are some words that go, but it's very different, you know. So it's not like, oh, he speaks French, he could communicate with him too. I mean, maybe little things here and there, which could be useful, but, you know.
Yeah, right. The universal language of soccer only gets you so far.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure we need to be doing anything complicated. Like, the point of having someone
who definitely do not need to be doing something
kick
complicated.
Kick the ball at his head.
Yeah. Oh, but and we don't seem to want to necessarily. And I just
frustratingly, we don't even generate corner kicks.
Well, and you know, I noticed something about I think it was a first half or a second half corner against Monterey. But you have 10 outfield players on the pitch. One of them is taking the corner, right? We had four guys outside the box, which means we were 5-on-11 inside the box. And I don't think this is unusual. I just happened to take note of it because it was wild to watch everyone walk back towards the center line while we were setting up a corner kick. But it just does not feel like a recipe for success. Got to figure out something to do there. Just John's making fun of how I'm holding my head here. We're all enjoying our stint here in the Black Pit of Negative Expectations.
Yeah, for the listener, both Aaron and John have their hands tented over their heads in dismay. I am stroking my beard, but in a sort of French nihilist kind of right. Life lacks meaning, and the Oakland roots reflect that.
Yeah. I mean, we're really testing the thesis that you put forth at the end of last season, Peter, that we repeated at the beginning of this season, that the goal here is simply to make it to next season. I think when we said that, we didn't expect that the form that the Roots ended last season on would carry over in quite so dramatic a fashion. As you'll recall, they finished the season 1-2-8 in their last 11 last year. They needed to get 7 points out of their last 33, and they got 5 and missed the playoffs. It's one of the more dramatic collapses I've ever had the pleasure of witnessing firsthand. They're 1-1.
Don't be ridiculous. You watched Arsenal last season.
I've said firsthand. Only okay, you got to enough. Witness that firsthand. And then, so they started 1-1-3 this season. So that's 2-3-11 in their last 16. And, you wonder how long they can go there at that kind of clip, because I mean you make it to next season, but at what cost? You know, at what cost? I mean, what do you guys think is the how much rope are we giving this coaching staff?
Low is the floor?
Yeah, like well, how long do we go?
It may be bottomless, my friend.
I would have agreed with you 3 weeks ago, honestly. That last match was the first time that it didn't feel like the stands at Pioneer were packed, and it was a beautiful day, and it seemed like a real good opportunity to have a big crowd, and we didn't. And there could be any number of factors for that. But I do sort of wonder if there is – we sort of wondered this at the end of last season. Like, is how reflective of the on-field performance is attendance? Because crowds were still big at the end of last season, even as the Roots lost every game. I sort of wonder if Monterey Bay is the crowd size at Monterey Bay is the canary in the coal mine here. Like, how long can you go only winning – 1 out of every 8 games.
That is a tough question to answer. I mean, I think Peter kind of alluded to it there. You know, I think the bottom is endless right now. I mean, I don't know what the end of the rope is. You might remember one of the things I wrote at the end of last season, when they brought Noah back, or, you know, just speculating over what to do with the future of the coaching staff, with the technical staff, was what happens when you start next season poorly, winless in one game, two games, one win in five games. What is it going to do? And you know, you mentioned the attendance there. I mean, I like to think that winning sells tickets. I like to think that if Roots are in a playoff push, more so like in 2022, that more people go. I think the attendance at towards the end of 2022 is better than last season. But I mean, it's only five games, and you wonder, what is the end? Is this team, I mean, right now, if this continues, you can only speculate that, oh, we're taking a mulligan on this year. We're just taking a walk over year. And I mean, all the people who are proponents of a pro rel, they're the ones that are with
looking off
the team and be like, this is why we don't want this to happen.
Yeah. I mean, tanking is a uniquely American thing, right? Because you have that protected spot in the league, and the part of the deal is you have to put up with seasons like this if you're a fan of these teams. But
I think that even if we're being as grim as possible, I think that the rope before a major change is at least several more games, because I mean it's not like there's a ripcord where they're like, it's not, you know, it's not like Venezia has been like, oh, we'll send Otar back as soon as you ask. Or, you know, like Albert Dequa is just ready to sign the paperwork as soon as the Roots are like, shit, we need more wins or we're not going to sell tickets. It's, you know, that I don't think that that's there. It's just sort of like, and I think that the other aspect is there have been moments. We won a game. We drew a game against good opposition. And every game since then has had some excuse. And like, I know I'm tired of excuses. I'm sure everyone else is too. But like, Brian Tamakis has played three games this season and he's our best player. Nevil Hackshaw has played four games this season. He will be playing four in the first 10 or whatever. And he's in our top five players. You know, he's in first name on the team sheet with Blanchett and Tamakis. Rasmussen and Riley both have injuries, and those are like the core parts of our, you know, like that's our good unit is our defense. And Johnny has been sick or whatever it was. And now, you know, and Johnny came back and we looked better. So I don't know. I mean, I think that the front office is likely, you know, I don't think the front office is looking at making major changes. That's not based on any information. It's just my assumption based on like what this team's finances look like. I also think like I'm not calling for major change right now, even though I think that Delgado could be doing a better job than he's doing. I don't think he's getting the most out of his players right now. But, you know, he's also dealing with a very small roster and a lot of turnover early on, and there are flashes. So I don't know. That's where I am.
Not in the black pit of negative expectations, clearly. There was an awful lot of optimism there. I don't know
I'm looking at it. I haven't, you know, gone over.
Yeah, what is your edge?
I mean I continue to look at this team and think that the downside, like the bad scenario for this team is not a 21-point season and finishing in last place. The bad scenario for this team is no Oakland roots in 2025. And I think a lot of fans really underestimate the odds of no more Oakland roots. Suddenly we're all deciding if we're going to support the town or Monterey Bay or just not go to soccer games on Saturday. And that's what I think that the budget situation is. You know, I mean, again, this is also not based on some insight, but it's based on like the fact that
we did get a look at those finances.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if they can run out a team that technically competes and it allows them to stay in a lighter shade of red, then I think that that's what they're going to do. And they're going to ask us to eat that shit sandwich because like 100 of us are fans who follow this really closely and everyone else is parents of middle schoolers.
Oh, that's an inspiring tagline. Oakland Roots, a team that technically competes.
And honestly, they've done a lot more than technically compete over the course of their history.
I mean,
although I think a lot of that was blowing a lot of money they didn't have on Quincy Ameriquois.
and I suppose this is a good time to mention that if you happen to be a constituent of an Alameda County supervisor, it's probably worth getting on the horn and talking with them about what is happening with the Coliseum. We don't have a whole lot to add here on this podcast, but we just want to make sure that no shenanigans are afoot, basically. And who knows what's going on there, but there's been some noise that Alameda wants to pull out of the deal on their side of things. So if you have an Alameda County supervisor, if you're in the listening area of this podcast, you have an Alameda County supervisor, it's probably worth dropping a line.
If you don't know how to get in touch with them, you can get in touch with anyone on this podcast and we can find that information for you.
That's true too. John, did you have something you wanted to add?
On which subject?
Literally anything. This is
I mean, we were talking about what the edge is, what is there a end to the rope for this coaching staff?
Right, or are we going to be edging all year long?
Is this what edging is? I'm not like totally up to speed on that, but I didn't think it was this.
You know, for legal reasons, I'm not sure we can go into any more detail on this podcast.
No.
I have to mark them all as non-explicit.
Anyways, the end of the rope. I mean, I would... Peter makes a good point on there being like... We don't know what the future holds. Does that reflect on the roster situation, the roster selection situation? I'm not sure. I think the longer we go, if we keep losing, it says that, look, guys, it is what it is. I mean, we're not going to break the bank for players right now. We're going to, you know, try and get into that eighth slot, try and get into the seventh slot to the postseason. That requires a lot of hits on the roster. That requires good coaching. So, I mean, I even wrote at the end of last season, like, are we an organization that does the normal thing like sports organizations do? You look at Orange County, they fired two mid-season coaches in recent memory. There's a lot of mid-season moves inside the USL. Are we among those teams, or are we going to think differently and allow Noah, who's in the first managerial job of his career, to continue building and developing as a coach? Are we going to allow Jordan Farrell, a young technical director, to continue learning the ropes in this thing, making relationships, and developing as a technical director, a scout, a talent scout, on an international scale? I mean, you can see routes do are trying to dive into markets that aren't often looked at, these island nations like Haiti, like Jamaica with Trayvon Reed. So is that the stance, you know? And I think as the days go by, if there are no moves, then it says, obviously, yes, it is. We are going to let these guys grow, and we're going to take our licks, and we're going to lose, because in the end, that makes winning a lot more sweeter. But, you know, that requires a lot of patience from a lot of people.
I also think, you know, I mean, so far they are sticking to their guns. They have not had a player on loan since, like, the Venezia guys in 2022. And, you know, the stated reason for that is that, well, not stated, what we understand the reason to be is that they want to develop players. They want to have players on their own roster under their own contracts and to be developing youth guys. And they are doing that. And everyone we've played so far this year, I mean, or almost everyone we've played so far this year has low knees, including Vegas, where we got victimized by their low knees. And that's, you know, and they're doing well. You know, if you want to get MLS guys that can't make their roster and pick them up on loan, that is doable in the USL. You know, MLS teams will send their players to you. And those guys turned into goals for Vegas, and we're not doing that. We'd rather have kids from the Central Valley that came through 510. And as much as I want to see goals, I respect the organizational mission to develop players. Unfortunately, I think that, you know, if what we're trying to do is send some of these guys on, you know, if the idea of getting Danny Gomez a ton of playing time is that he can move on to bigger things and the Roots get a paycheck, is you're not going to get that if you're not winning. You know, no one wants to go and buy a number 8 from a team with one win in 20 or whatever it is.
Well, the nice news for a team on a bit of a skid is that our next opponent, El Paso Locomotive, have started the season in an even less inspiring way, as they currently sit at 0-1-4 through 5 games. Their single draw, well, this is a bit of a kick in the teeth. Their single draw was a home draw, 1-1 against Monterey Bay, but they've otherwise lost at home to Hartford, home to Louisville City, away to Las Vegas Lights, and away to New Mexico United. Not the most inspiring set of results so far. This is a roster that is, I mean, it's just loaded with USL veterans. I mean, guys we've who have been in the league for years: Aaron Bazilevich, Tumi Moshabane, Justin Dillon, who else? Amando Moreno,
Akinyede.
You poke any part of his roster with a stick, and you're going to find somebody who's been in a USL roster for a very long time. I haven't watched any of their games, but maybe part of what's happening is that some of these guys, their race is run. This is a pretty old team for this league. It's not an old team, you know, in a global sense, in a cosmic sense, but, you know, professional sports tend to be a bit of a young man's game. And it pains me now when I watch things and I think, oh my God, he's so old, he's 30. But that's, you know, that's a bit of where we are with the El Paso Locomotive roster. So, you know, this has to be a get right game for the Roots. The way that the Monterey Bay match ended, not so much with the winning goal being surrendered in the 86th minute, but with the post-match scuffle. I mean, that's got to focus your attention somehow. There aren't, you'd love to be at home for this at this point, but, you know, just, you know, on the road, there are probably are not many better options of teams to face right now than El Paso Locomotive. You know, 1.5, they're second to last in the league. It's got to be a get-right game, and if it's not, this season could go south fast, basically, is what I'm saying.
I don't mind the road game right now. I mean, I think that this team has had some bad home games, and I think as much as I think they feed on the fans, I think they might benefit right now from an underdog, go on the road. You're not playing in front of the people you know. Sort of like a like a mental reset for them. I'm fine with that. El Paso haven't kept a clean sheet this year. So, you know, this may be a stoppable force, movable object kind of game. But
right. They haven't kept a clean sheet, but they've only surrendered a single goal
in most of them, yeah.
Four of their five games. Now, that being said, they've surrendered a single goal in four of their five games, and they haven't had the offense to overcome that in any of those. So it's going to be a good game for the defense, hopefully.
Yeah, they can't keep a clean sheet. Well, we can't either. So it's a perfect matchup. You know, I wrote in the blog that these next four really are a good opportunity. We got El Paso coming up, you know, they're behind us. Then we come back home, El Farolito for US Open Cup. For me, that's the one I'm keeping an eye on, because if we lose, you know, like we talked about earlier, what is the end of that rope? But then what after the Burrito Boys, Detroit, we got Detroit on the road. That's tough. They're in first place. I mean, they were still one of those kind of middle of the pack teams last season. I mean, if you could take points on the road, that's wonderful. And then you have Colorado Springs, who are in dead last, haven't won a game.
Yeah, they look dire this year.
So, I mean, these are four games that are good opportunities. I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, what is the end of the rope? These are four winnable games. Go into El Paso. Hopefully you could take points. I mean, these guys, this whole team, Noah Delgado too, they got to be looking at this like, we have to win. We have to go all out for this win. El Farolito at home, we have to beat the shit out of them. Detroit, deal with that away game. Come back and then play Colorado, who is struggling. Beat them. You know, if you could turn the corner in these four matches, then, you know, we might be having a completely different discussion come May 1st, you know, and then have that chip on your shoulder and saying, look, we're proving them wrong. Like, I hope they hear this. I hope you're like, look, fucking, let's prove them fucking wrong. Like, come on.
Well, I like how both of you have come around to optimism over the course of this discussion here. So let's keep that rolling, and let's talk about how the Oakland Roots are going to beat El Paso this weekend.
I can't make it better by being upset about it.
That's such a mature take, Peter. I'm not sure what you're doing in the sports takes game, if that's how you're going to look at things, but
getting several dozen clicks per article. That's what I'm doing in the sports takes game.
Oh, all right, John, we'll start with you. What does the Roots victory this weekend look like?
All right. Get the optimism going. 3-1 win.
Holy smokes.
Johnny scores twice. Memo scores in front of his hometown. And they take that into Tuesday's U.S. Open Cup game and beat the shit out of them too. If we'll probably see talk again after that. So I'm predicting a win there too.
I think 2-1. I also think Johnny scores. I don't have a prediction for the other goal. I think it's pure hubris to suggest I could predict a second goal, and I'll be guaranteeing it doesn't happen if I try to say who scores it.
Well, I like 1-0. That seems to be the modal outcome for El Paso this year. Three of their games have been a 1-0 loss. I think Oakland has just the guys who can make it a fourth game in six where El Paso loses 1-0. Obviously, that one will be an own goal, right? Some nonsense off the back of someone's foot or something. That's how we'll do it. But I do think you got these guys back. They were creating chances. Something's going to go in eventually, and still trust Paul. You know, I can be as down in the rest of what's going on as you can be, but we got a guy between the sticks who is pretty darn reliable. And then, yeah, I think you're right, John. We'll be able to take El Fatalito. I don't want to predict a blowout because I don't imagine we're going with the big guns in that game. But I still think, you know, a tidy 3-0, something along those lines.
One thing with Fatalito, Hackshaw and Jai could play in that game. So I think we'll definitely get them. And I think we'll still get a good amount of starters. You know, I think this is one you take seriously. You know, play the kids. I mean, Ilya is a big part of the lineup already, so maybe I could see that. But I think you definitely take them seriously. But Charleston, I mean, the 1-0 win, that would be the first clean sheet since Charleston of August of last year. So that would be, I think, I'm not sure what I would rather have, a big 3-1 win or a clean sheet victory, because that would mean a lot too.
I agree with John. I mean, I think it's a good point that we might as well run out Hackshaw and Jai, because they're otherwise not even going to be getting any game time for a little while. I think we probably, to the extent that we play kids against Farolito, I think it's probably only Ilya and Etzgar, you know, the guys who are really on the cusp of the team. John has something.
I made a mistake. Jai is actually serving a red card suspension for the U.S. Open Cup from last year, so he will not be able to play.
Remarkable.
Spectacular. Well, we're predicting to win either way. This weekend, I think you can catch a lot of fans at Mad Oak Bar and Yard in Oakland. You might be able to catch some others at Line 51, classic Roots watch location. And then we'll be back home for El Fatalito, right? So that's a nice midweek treat if you can make it out to Pioneer Field for that one. But for sure, you'll see us out somewhere in Oakland this weekend. And until then, up the Roots.